Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Thank you for listening to MoneyWeb at Midday. In the next 30 minutes, I'll go beyond the headlines with insight and analysis from leaders and decision makers shaping our future. Live or on demand, I'll bring you stories that keep you informed and ahead. Coming up on the program today, a secret coalition retreat sparks questions over GNU stability. Are new car licensing rules coming next year? South Africa's steel slump exposes cracks in economic policy and competitiveness. And China reshapes trade, but at what cost to global stability? It's Monday, the 3rd of November. Now, the Sunday Times reporting that President Ramaphosa has been hosting a closed-door strategy retreat with leaders of the Government of National Unity. It's a gathering that signals, I think, concern about coalition cohesion, rising political tension, and general talk. And there is once again concern, I think, of possible succession planning in the ANC. The meeting comes as policy battles sharpen, public confidence or patience, I think, is fraying. And there are ongoing questions, intensifying questions about who's really steering the GNU and whether it's governing with clarity and purpose. So it's a big issue. And let's try and make some sense of this. I'm in conversation now with political commentator Phumlani Majozi. Phumlani, welcome. What does the secrecy, first of all, around this retreat tell us about the state of the coalition and maybe the level of trust between the partners right now?
Well, it highlights the fact that this is really a coalition government that is not in the same path, right? There is no coordination on most significant things. There are very deep disagreements we've seen over the past year. Divisions within the coalition itself over very critical issues. And I think the secrecy here is basically to discuss the future of this GNU, right? Because there have been many questions. These guys, they haven't met in months, apparently, and this is happening after that such a long time. And people have been asking, what's the usefulness? I've been asking myself, what is the usefulness of this GNU if these people are not even meeting on a regular basis? So here, I think the secret signals that there are very critical issues that need to be discussed. And, there are very big disagreements we have seen over the year and lack of coordination. And they just want to sort of, go away and try and address those issues in secrecy without much attention from the media to try and resolve the very critical issues, they disagree upon.
Principal among those issues are what, do you think? Is it the structural weakness within the coalition itself, or is it simply policy differences that are starting to widen?
Jeremy, it's about policy differences, right? We saw recently the ANC releasing its what it calls an action plan. What do they call it? Economic action plan, right? A list of things that they want to do. And they said that, of course, they will want to discuss with them, with the GNU. We saw the Democratic Alliance, putting forward its alternative to Black economic empowerment. Again, they are saying that this is something that needs to be discussed within the GNU. And guess what? The ANC rejected straight away the DA's BEE proposals, or I should say the alternative to BEE, they rejected straight away. It's the fundamental policy differences. And for us who watch South Africa, it's not surprising. We were expecting that there will be some very important disagreements, significant disagreements on critical matters such as Black economic empowerment, where the ANC doesn't want to move, right? And the question is, are they going to, is something like this, that they, this meeting that they are having, is it going to try to resolve this? Well, I doubt, you know, I doubt.
So do you think, are you suggesting then that these ideological differences are not manageable anymore, that they are now actually threatening the coalition's future? Because we've seen this coalition navigate some fairly rocky terrain in the past, haven't we?
We have. We saw with the VAT discussion. But I think the value-added tax, the disagreements, it was a large, it was a sort of few more parties were really opposed beyond just the coalition elements or coalition partners. There were parties outside of the coalition that were opposed to the VAT, right? It really was something that was unpopular in the country. So that helped to really push through and for the ANC to end up conceding, right? So I just think that these issues are not going to be resolved anytime these disagreements anytime soon. And we will continue to see the GNU being basically very weak in terms of coming up with something that they can work together on and say, this is ours. We agree on this, you know, when it comes to policy. We are going to struggle to see that going forward. That is just my observation. But here's what is very interesting. I doubt what's very clear is that no one wants to say, I'm leaving this GNU, right? The DA doesn't want to leave because they have fear that they are going to look bad, that they collapsed this GNU. The ANC also does not want to be responsible for the collapse of this GNU because, you know, even the markets in general, they think this is still positive. So it's going to be very interesting.
All right. So final one then. Do you expect any real outcome from this retreat, or do you think it's just political theater to calm nerves?
I think it's a catch-up, you know. It's just a catch-up after months of lack of coordination. We're not going to see significant, thing coming out of it. But also remember, Jeremy, most of these issues that they disagree upon is very big issues that you wouldn't finish discussing them in a day or two, right? They'll take some time to resolve the disagreements. So I'm not expecting anything substantive here. Of substance coming out of these meetings, but at least I personally think that it's positive that they are meeting after a long time without meeting. And then hopefully in future, we don't know, but I very much doubt they could agree on some fundamental things.
Phumlani Majozi, thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
All right, let's move now from politics to cars, and big changes are reportedly coming to how South Africans register and license their vehicles. But there seems to be a little confusion about whether new rules have actually been promulgated or if all of this is just confined to one province, the Western Cape. I'm in conversation now with Colin Msibi, who speaks for the Department of Transport. Colin, a very warm welcome to you, and help me understand this. As far as I understand it, the new licensing rules were meant to have started already. Is there a delay? If so, why? And what is the real rollout timeline?
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having us, just to give us an opportunity to clarify. Look, honestly, there hasn't been any changes to the National Road Traffic Act. What could possibly be happening is the province, the Western Cape, having to introduce their own SOP in terms of how things should be done in terms of the renewal of the disc. So at this point, there was no changes envisaged or promulgation that was going to be happening. So our interpretation of the story that came out was that probably the MAC has taken a decision that there has to be additional requirements introduced in the province, and the Act does empower the MACs to do so.
It's not ideal, though, if you have one province going in a different direction, surely.
Look, it all depends on the circumstances in that specific province. It would be the challenges that they face. And then they realize that probably they would need to introduce the new SOPs to deal with those challenges. So we wouldn't want to pass any judgment. But as I said to you, the Act, there's a certain section in the Act which does empower the MECs to do so.
What is your understanding then of the SOPs that are going to apply as far as the Western Cape is concerned, and how do they differ from the national strategy or national program?
Well, the, in terms of the National Act, it simply just says it does recognize any form of identification. So what happens is if your disk is due for renewal, you would get an SMS. And then in the SMS, there is a PIN. So you can simply, when you go to a testing center or DLTC, you simply just give them the PIN on the SMS, and then they will be able to pull up your documents because they are already there on the system and they are able to renew your disk. In the case where there is an email, you simply just give them an email, because after COVID, we had to introduce the email and the SMS system. Even on the drive-throughs, where you are able to drive through to renew your disk, you are doing the same. You simply just give them the PIN, which is on the SMS. So now, I think what we understand on the article is that you've gone over and above the SMS and the PIN. You've got to produce a certified form of identification, which we're saying there isn't anything planned from the national point of view to introduce such a requirement. So hence, we're just thinking probably it is the province that is coming up with that SOP, which they are more than allowed to do so.
How much consultation has there been between the Western Cape and the National Department, though?
It would be nice to know, and because I see that it does say they spoke to the department, and I've spoken to the officials who are dealing with the legislation on these matters. They have no clue as to who was spoken to. So we're quite as confused. I've had to do some consultation on this matter, and they are not quite sure as to who was consulted by the province. So it would be quite interesting to know who exactly they spoke to, because as far as they are concerned, there isn't any changes which have been introduced.
It might be a simplistic interpretation as far as I'm concerned, but it would seem to me that there's now a conflictual situation that exists between the National Department and the Western Cape, which ostensibly is going it alone.
I don't think so. I honestly think that, as I say to you, they are using their own discretion probably to introduce this particular requirement. But in terms of the consultation, I wouldn't want to say they didn't speak to anyone. They may have maybe escalated to the DG level. It could be. But I didn't speak to the DG. I must say that. But I'm saying that I don't think they are opposed to what we have on the Act and what they are trying to introduce, because the Act says the province can be able to introduce a specific a requirement where they see fit. I mean, it could be that in this regard, and would find that probably there was some sort of an engagement between the HOD and the DG. So we may just have to establish who they spoke to. And we're not saying they did a wrong thing by so doing, honestly, because I think the article is very clear. They needed some clarification, and probably it could have been the DG that they spoke to. We're not so sure.
All right, let me come at it from a slightly different angle. Then it would seem to me, having listened to your explanation, that there is additional security that the Western Cape is putting on application.
Indeed.
Surely
Indeed.
That's a good thing. It's something that the National Department Indeed. Would support, and ultimately you
Certain.
Might be following suit.
Certainly. Definitely. Remember, we don't issue license disc as National Department of Transport. We simply just deal with policy. But hence, we've left it open for a province to decide whether they're going to introduce new SOPs. And in this case, the Western Cape have done so, and we applaud that, so that it adds more security into the system. So if other provinces were to make that decision and do the same, we would certainly support it, because the Act does allow it, to be honest. So I think we certainly support what the Western Cape is trying to do in this regard.
So as a result of that, then, would you be recommending to other provinces to look at the new model that the Western Cape is implementing?
Well, I think at the MINMEC meetings, it could be something that could be discussed, but we certainly are satisfied with what the Act is saying for now, to say the MSC has all the right to introduce the new SOPs. I think we would leave it at that. But if there is a need and there is a problem which has been identified, which may require new SOPs for each and every province. Therefore, it can then be a matter that would have to be prescribed. But at this point, there isn't anything that points to the situation where we may have to prescribe or make it mandatory for all the provinces to do so.
So very quickly then, what is your next step?
Well, our next step, honestly, it would be to get clarity from the Western Cape, just to find out as to who they engage and what is it. Because now it seems to me from this article, there would be a confusion when we're saying that we are not introducing any new laws. And yet the province is saying that there's something that is being done. So we just have to get clarity as to whether is this the new SOP they are introducing. And if so, we would certainly support it, but because it is in line with the legislation that is in place at the moment.
All right.
So it's a matter of just finding out for information purposes for ourselves.
Okay, we'll circle back and report on this a little later in the week. Colin Msebe, appreciate your time. He speaks for the National Department of Transport.
MoneyWeb at midday. Top stories to keep your eyes and ears on.
Now, the world is watching as the Chinese President Xi Jinping continues to build momentum. He's striking deals, reshaping trade, and also leveraging rare earth supply chains in ways that some say may shift global power balances and economic dependency. Now, with talk of tariff reductions, export controls, and new trade alignments, I guess the question is this genuine advantage for China or maybe a strategic gamble with global ramifications? It's a big question. And in that respect, I'm joined now by international relations analyst and commentator Sipa Mandla Zondi. Sipa Mandla, a very warm welcome to you. It would appear on the surface, at least, that Xi is on a winning streak. In your opinion, how much of that is tactical versus strategic long-term gain? What do you think he's thinking?
Yes, I mean, your intro get it right in my view, because in a game that we saw being played a couple of days ago in South Korea, we should remember that there had been an attempt to redefine this relationship, and President Trump has really made it very clear that he wants to change this relationship, and he has used his usual tools to try and do that, which was to impose very stiff tariffs on Chinese goods and sparing only the critical minerals that the United States need from China. And that was meant to force China to the table in order for China to enter into a deal that would ostensibly be in the U.S.'s favor. And it has happened with a slew of countries, including South Korea, and the whole EU caved in, and many other countries. But it turned out not to work that way. The Chinese simply did not respond to that plot. And I guess the Chinese understood what was happening. So they simply had their fort, did not reach out, did not come down. The United States had to change tack, and realizing that this was a stalemate that was mutually hurting, and it was also hurting the United States in two ways, hurting the United States in terms of trade, very dependent on China and trade, but secondly, in terms of prestige, and a sense that Trump was no longer having his way. So it had to change tack, and that's what led us to what happened in South Korea. In many ways, the United States simply climbed down from its high horse and had to take a deal with another state that had to with China, and they had to compromise a lot. So in many ways, it's a strategic victory for China, because it signals that Trump's strategy will not always work if you know how to deal with it. And it is a strategic defeat for the United States, because its route, that one route, strategic lever that it's been using, is now being shown to not always work. And it happens just alongside the Canada situation, where Canada is also saying it's diversifying. It is not going to cave into the United States. The United States can impose whatever tariffs they want to impose. It is looking for other partners. All of this is now destroying this one single tool the United States has for rejigging the geopolitical balance.
So let me ask you this then, against that backdrop, for Africa and South Africa in particular, does this growing trade muscle spell any kind of new opportunity or maybe even new dependency?
There's a number of things. One is that it may moderate United States' action. I mean, it may cause United States to moderate its expectations of what it can do. Because United States has been declining for a long period of time and was using this gung-ho strategy right now to try and rebalance things, see what it can salvage of its strategic advantage over the long term. But it's now showing that this doesn't quite work. So this might help cause a rethink in the White House. I mean, when I saw that statement from the Secretary of War, as they call it in the United States, praising his meetings with the Chinese and talking about that they're going to be working together, then I remember that the Chinese have given zip, nothing. They've given nothing, literally. Now, when you see the Pentagon praising all of that, it almost like it's saying, we are joining China in the high horse. Then things are changing in a more fundamental way. I think it's partly because the people who are managing United States strategic policy now are not specialists in international relations or in diplomacy or in power relations and all of those. These are just business people and media people who are very naive and thought they would have one single tool that would remake that. So that one is a serious one because it might lead us more towards more negotiated outcomes across the board. It might embolden more countries to move in this direction. The second thing is that this is strengthening the Chinese and their strategy for reform of global governance and all of those kinds of things. There was an agreement there that they will meet. They probably will be discussions or so on the sidelines of the G20 summit in South Africa end of this month. It means they're beginning to shift the strategy and resume new ways of dealing with this. But what I'm not quite sure is how the United States is going to come out of this over a period of time, because, I mean, we have to think about it. I mean, if the Trump administration, with the Trump personality, he is beginning to back down, compromise, there isn't a single high tariff they've maintained. They've calmed down in all of them and all of those kinds of things. If they are dissipating, what's the hope for the United States to maintain some element of strategic advantage?
So how then does South Africa position itself in this game that you outlined? Do we partner more strategically with China? Do we look towards the West more assertively, or is it somewhere in between?
We balance that. And if they asked me what we should be doing, I would say stay out of the geopolitical battle, keep things as they are there, and focus a lot more on the second tier, which is the fast-growing economies that are middle-income, high-income countries, some South Korea, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, and countries of that size, Turkey and others. Focus on those countries because there is a lot you can gain economically from them. And over time, you also gain a lot in terms of geopolitics. You become part of an emerging future global powers. From that side of the world, it will never be like the big two or the great two, because these ones will be more cooperative by design. They will be more interested in tracking deals and working through multilateral system. And I would say South Africa focus on that and let the two big giants deal with each other in whatever way they are dealing with.
Thank you very much indeed for that assessment. I've been in conversation with Sipamandla Zondi, an international relations commentator and analyst.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now let's turn our attention to South Africa's steel industry. It's a bellwether for manufacturing and a sector that I don't need to tell you is under real pressure. Now, in a new National Employers Association note, Gerard Papenfuss warns that the decline we are seeing in steel is a microcosm of broader economic damage. Just by way of background, manufacturing contributes roughly 13% to South Africa's GDP, yet recent figures from the Metal and Engineering Industry Bargaining Council shows the sector has shed something like 1,300 employees in 5 years, an estimated 110,000 jobs. That is a staggering 23% fall in employment. It's not just a data point. It's families, firms, towns losing their economic base. So let's get into this story a little more deeply. I'm in conversation now with the chief executive of NISA, Gerard Papenfuss. Gerard, in plain language, how serious is the steel sector decline? And you're calling it a microcosm of wider economic damage. What does that mean?
It's we see economic decline in all sectors, Jeremy. It's happening all over. I think it is more severe in the steel industry because of certain factors which we can discuss. But the general ills of South Africa that's caused by industrial policy and general policies is there's a decline. And it stems, first of all, from a lack of business confidence. But the steel industry is has very specific things that is plaguing the industry, and government just is not able to deal with this. They do not play the role of a honest broker. They have their hands in the industry. I think they have interests in the industry. They want to promote certain industries above other interests. So, you know, they cannot be trusted with the industry, and that's their job, to create a playing field that is fair to everybody. Now, we need to understand it's complex to create a fair playing field because everybody, you know, will perceive their particular circumstances and certain issues as a bit unfair. But so you won't get never get a situation that pleases everybody. But what they do is obviously wrong, and the arrangement in the industry, and especially with regard to the collective bargaining dispensation and the issue surrounding import duties. Wages, of course, huge issue. But so wages and import duties is a massive thing in the industry. And we're talking about what's happened in the last 5 years. But, I mean, this is coming from, this is the last 25 years that this has happened. And we're talking about an industry that at a particular point employed 700,000 people. Steel has grown by 4% a year. We'd have by now employed 1 million people in the industry. We're standing at 300,000, roughly.
Yeah, Gerard, you paint a very desperate and worrying picture. Realistically, do you think we've left it too late? Do you believe the sector can still be saved?
Well, and if government doesn't bring about changes, And I mean, they can do it through legislation, but the trade unions play too important role. Let's just talk about collective bargaining. The whole system is just wrong. It is the steel industry. If you want to employ a worker with no experience, no education, and the lowest level, the cost to employ that person, cost to company, in other words, salaries plus the on cost. Your leave, your sick leave, all the levies, all the duties and on levies that you need to pay, everything. That person will cost you over 16,000 rand a month. A person with no experience. That's the entry-level wage. Now, so if you don't want to pay it, you need to get an exemption. And in order to get an exemption, you need to prove that your business is in serious financial trouble. No, that's too late. I mean, if a company that's in serious financial trouble do not employ. So here is the thing that can be solved. I mean, we are a developing economy. This is wages that you get in developed economies. But it can be solved through change in legislation. But the ANC is definitely not going to do that, because they will not have the support to do that. They can't afford it. So that's out.
So, Gerard, let me ask you this question then. When an organization such as yours makes overtures to government about the concerns that you've outlined to me, What kind of response are you getting? Are you being heard?
Well, we've been talking about this for, you know, it sounds exaggerated if I say decades. But no, there's no plan. They cannot change it. So this is unfortunate. I mean, the steel industry is now very big in the news with the situation surrounding AMSA. But I don't think there's a plan. If they have a plan, they've developed a so-called steel master plan a year or two ago. They've realized now that's dead. You know, you cannot interfere with market powers. And sometimes you need to interfere, but when you then interfere, you need to do it with huge wisdom and with respect. If you have people in charge that do not understand market powers, and people then introduce mechanisms to force the industry in a particular direction. You know, the market economy, money is like a deer. You know, you scare it, it runs away. And this is what's happening here. People... Some people are forced to close, others just, you know, go to lower gears in the economy. They've lost confidence in the industry. And the fact that it still exists and that there's still something of an industry is actually a miracle.
Is there, and just a quick answer, please, is there any immediate relief then that would keep viable employers alive over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, the fact is, in 12 months from now, there will still be employers that's alive. Industry like that just don't die. It's a slow death. Mm. So in 12 months' time, unless something happens, something is done, the industry will exist. There will still be a lot of employers that exist, but it will be less than what we have now.
Thank you very much indeed. I've been in conversation there with Gerard Papenfuss, Chief Executive Officer of the National Employers Association of South Africa. Gerard, thank you very much. And that is our program at the start of this week. You've been listening to MoneyWeb at midday. We are here every weekday at noon with the latest in current affairs, the economy and policy. You can always catch the podcast version a little later. Thank you for making us part of your day. Until next time, goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.